Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, April 27th, 2026. Thanks for joining us here on this Monday morning. My name is Magnus Tiewald. Joining me a little later in the program will be Peter R.H. And we got a bunch of good stuff lined up for you today. We're going to start off with an interview with SFU researcher Ted Scott. He's a PhD student, or sorry, not SFU, UBC researcher Ted Scott. He's a PhD student in the Department of Geography, and he's done research that shows that summers are getting longer in most temperate latitudes. That's the latitudes we live in here in Vancouver and Burnaby, by a kind of shocking amount of up to 7 days per decade. So we're going to talk to him about that. Sounds like, you know, and it's not all a good thing, longer summers. Because, you know, that's climate change. We also have a report from Danny Nesvadarani. Disability advocates are concerned about cuts to housing supports for the disabled, and they held a protest last week outside the office of Housing Minister Gregor Robertson. So we'll hear from that. As we always do, we'll have our talk with Pablo Vimas. He is our weekly our gardens expert, and we're going to be talking about successful watering to get the best out of your plants and your garden. It's more than just throwing water at the problem, let me tell you. And Peter will be here a little later in the show to bring his topic for the week. And a bunch of other stuff, some good music and whatnot as well. So please, we'll get going right here. This Ted Scott is a student at UBC working towards his PhD. Actually, his second PhD. He doesn't. He's a bit low key about the fact that he's got one already, but working towards his second one. And he's done some really interesting research on changing seasons. And I had a chance to talk with him last week. Joining me now is Ted Scott, a PhD. The student at UBC in the Department of Geography. You're part of a team that's been studying seasonal change in mid-temperate latitudes. Mid-temperate, that's kind of where we live, is a mid, in the, sort of, before we get into the rest of it, what is the band, what does that mean, mid-temperate latitudes?
Sure, yeah. So the kind of the mid-latitudes are really the region north of the tropics in the northern hemisphere up until you get to the polar region. And then in the southern hemisphere, you know, at the southern end of the tropics down to like just north of Antarctica. And that's, that region is what we explored because that region has a pretty, you know, clear seasonal cycle of what we would call four seasons. The tropics tend to have not four divided seasons. And the polar regions, while we can say they have four seasons, what they experience is not like, you know, where most of the humans live.
Right. So what you've been studying is seasonal change. And sort of the headline is that summers are getting longer, but there's a lot more to the story. So can you tell us about this research and what you found?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the way to begin is to say that, you know, we found in our research that, you know, warming from human-driven climate change has really dramatically changed the warmest season of the year. And in our case, I kind of like to liken it to how people might be perceiving the summer season. If you're like me, your perception of summer is that it is a different feel, a different vibe, a different experience than maybe when you were a child. And that was an impetus for doing this research. And so, you know, if you feel that way about summers, you're absolutely perceptive about that, because we found kind of three key things. One is that if you feel like summers feel like they last a long time, that is exactly what we found. We found that summers have been getting longer, and really that the number of days with summer conditions, and I can talk more about how we define that, is growing 1.5 times faster since the 1990s than prior than that. And so, talking about a couple specific places, if we want to talk about the Vancouver area, summers since 1990 are getting about 7 days every 10 years added to them. So every decade, summer lasts about 7 days longer, or in 40 years, about a month longer.
And that's quite a significant change. I mean, basically a week longer every 10 years is huge.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. And it's perceptible. That's what I'm saying. Like, we as humans are like, things feel different. And the nice thing is that the data backs that up. A couple of the other key findings are, if you're like me, it feels like summer just kind of abruptly appears. And then also maybe at the tail end, you might be noticing that it feels like we go from kind of summer conditions to fall abruptly. And that is exactly what we found. We found that those shoulder seasons on either side of summer seem to be shrinking in terms of how long they last transitioning between these seasonal edges. And then the last thing is, if you feel like summers feel more intense, we also found that the data agrees with that, that the sort of buildup of heat during summer is rapidly growing. And also another way to think about that is, once it gets warm, it seems like it just kind of stays warm. I remember that summers you'd have warm and then maybe you'd cool off a bit, and then you'd get warm and you'd cool off, and that's how summer would be. And we just seems like we're having less of that cooling off, and the data supports that.
It certainly seems to me that when I was young, we would get temperatures into the 30s just for a little bit in August. You know, now we're getting that starting in July, and of course we had that heat dome of huge temperatures in June.
Yeah.
You know, just a few years back.
Yeah. And you know, we know that kind of the occurrence of heat waves, you know, it's heat. It tends to coincide in terms of really uncomfortable temperatures as happening in the warmer season. So, of course, if the warmer season itself is expanding, we're going to have the potential to see kind of those warm, warm heat waves earlier and earlier, and also later.
Yeah. What does it mean at the other part of the year? Because we've just gone through a winter that was pretty mild, no snowfall really to measure at all here in Vancouver. What does it mean for the winters?
Sure. Well, and so my research didn't look into winters, but, you know, others have. And we know that winters are actually kind of the research says that it's the fastest warming season. So the kind of the bottom temperatures are going up in winter. And so, you know, in terms of length and some of that other stuff, like other researchers have suggested that, you know, winters may be shrinking as well. But another way to think about that is, there are 365 days in the year. If summer is taking longer, everything else has to be shrinking.
Mm-hmm. So what's the significance of this beyond just, you know, more days at the beach?
Right. Yeah. And of course, I'm really sympathetic to the like, well, what's wrong with longer summers? Summers are great. That's when I go ride my bike. That's, you know, when I can dress a little, you know, lighter. I can spend more time outside. And while all of that is true, the summer season, and especially hotter and longer summer seasons, can be really disruptive to things that are sort of baked in terms of expectations of this nice gradual seasonal cycle with a predictable rhythm. Instead, earlier starting summers is going to impact quite a number of systems, like the food system. Think about when farmers plant their crops. The weather may be more conducive to planting. And in fact, maybe that last frost that they wait for before they get the stuff in the ground to start, you know, the growing season, that's going to happen earlier and earlier. But a challenge there is, a lot of these crops rely on pollinators to pollinate them, and those pollinators may not be ready. But also true is the hours of daylight, those aren't shifting. So if you plant earlier, you may be planting and yet have, especially those of us in these northern latitudes, like you don't have a lot of daylight early on. And so that's going to adjust kind of how the whole food supply works. Other things are water supply. You think about how, you know, we hope for a nice snowpack in the Pacific Northwest that's going to be the battery of fresh water supply that we can draw on all throughout, you know, the spring and summer and into fall. And if we have rapid warming conditions early on, that snowmelt, whatever snow we manage to, you know, accumulate, it's going to melt quickly. And there's a couple downsides to that. It means that we're not going to have this gradual recharge of water supply, but also the ground is saturated and rapid snowmelt can lead to flooding. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple other things, but kind of the last piece that I'm especially worried about, because we're so used to the nice temperate conditions, say here in the Pacific Northwest, is that we're going to need cooling. The energy demand for cooling is going to go up, and people who never thought they needed an air conditioner, or maybe they got one because of the heat dome, you know, if they could afford it at the time, we're going to expend a lot of energy for cooling during the warm season. And something I'm concerned about there is that if you don't have an air conditioner, then, and you can afford it, you can get a heat pump. Now you've got an electrified system for both heating and cooling. That's great. But let's say you add an air conditioner and you continue with the gas furnace you have, you know, you're basically continuing a heating and cooling setup that is exacerbating the climate crisis.
So this change, because you mentioned 5 to 7 days occurring now, 50% faster than in the previous period you were you looked at before 1990.
Right.
So even that seems pretty quick. How does this kind of rate of change compare to other periods where we've seen climate change happen in the climate record?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, the climate scientists would remind us, and if anybody has seen the famous, you know, sort of hockey stick plot of how temperatures are changing, that we're seeing a temperature increase happening over a shorter span of time than ever in any records we have. You know, the Earth has been warmer than it is right now, but that was a very different looking Earth mm-hmm. than it is now. And, you know, during a lot of those, especially warm periods, humans didn't have societies. We didn't have civilization. It was, you know, more ancient humans or, you know, our precursors that were surviving those conditions, and they migrated, you know, to be wherever was comfortable if they could. But, you know, we've got a society that's kind of set in place. We have cities where they are. One of the findings of this study is that the changes, the 5 to 7 days per decade average for the mid-latitudes, that is true even at coastal areas. So, you know, we think of Vancouver as a coastal area that's kind of moderated by the ocean, and many other coastal cities kind of have that same reputation. But we found that the growth in summer length, the growth in heat, the abrupt transitions, those are also happening at coastal margins. And so kind of the belief that coasts are not safe, but, you know, don't experience some of these changes is not borne out by this research.
Well, I think your research also indicated that the most dramatic numbers were actually over ocean areas.
That's true. So some of the changes were the most rapid over oceans. And when we talk about over oceans, we're talking about like the air just above the ocean surface. Yeah. That was a new thing about this study. Other people have looked at kind of just what's happening in the seasons over land, which yeah. makes sense. That's where people are. But the ocean, I mean, that covers a very large percentage of the planet, and it controls a lot of the weather.
Do you understand yet whether why that is, why it's more dramatic over the oceans?
I don't have results on sort of root cause. I'm hoping, you know, that this research kind of drives people who are more have more expertise in those kinds of things to go, that is an interesting and important finding. Let's see if we can talk about why. Some of that, of course, is that if I had to guess, it's that we know that 90% of the heat from, you know, climate warming is actually going into the ocean. The oceans are absorbing that, and then kind of the great circulation that happens in the ocean pushing those temperatures down. But if the ocean surfaces are getting warmer and warmer, kind of the efficiency of that temperature exchange may lose power, you know? And so some of the summers rising rapidly thing maybe it's an indication that there's something going on there, but I'm hoping that some ocean researchers will dive into that.
Right. And this seems like a really lay person friendly measure of climate change, because when I read about it, I thought it was really interesting to think about what your sort of personal experience, knowing that things have changed and seeing that sort of quantified in a way. How do you think this can help people understand what's going on in the world?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think that it is really important to do science, especially climate science, that kind of feels relevant. And, you know, whether it challenges our perceptions or it supports our perceptions, it's part of things that we can understand without, you know, advanced expertise. So that is a big motivation in doing this kind of climate science. As to what it kind of can do for people, the nice thing about this is, because it does match a lot of people's perceptions, it is a way of relating to the climate that is very different from hearing the climate is warmer, debates about is it 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer, or is it 1.4 warmer, like those kinds of...
And I know for myself, I hear those numbers, but it's hard to place that into what does that mean?
Yeah, really.
The way I experience or understand.
Exactly, yeah. And really, like a small gradual temperature change isn't really all that perceptible to us. You know, even a day being 1 degree warmer than the previous day, we don't really notice that. But things like seasonal changes, things that really are, you know, kind of part of our day in, day out, you know, when do kids go to school? You think about like fall sports. If fall sports happen at the same time as they've always happened, they may happen at times that are extremely warm and dry. And so now we're putting kids and adults out, you know, in challenging weather to do those sports. And there are going to be human health risks with that. Same as with spring sports. I used to be a coach of cross-country running in the fall and track and field in the spring. And in both cases, our sports seasons were interrupted by warmer temperatures, forest fire smoke, you know, things that we had to really adjust. But the system, like when the sports happened, that was really fixed. Like we always had the season at that time. And so these are some of the things that are going to get potentially disrupted, and disrupted quite a bit.
So are you planning to continue on research in this area? And where do you hope this leads?
Yeah, absolutely. So I hope that, you know, for example, we talked about oceans. I hope it spurs some others to trying to look into some of the root causes. People who are kind of more driven to understand, say, the physics of the why in some of these things. Not that I don't like that stuff, but I do really like maintaining the connection to kind of general human experience. Right. But one of the things that is important is I found these trends. The trends are pretty, you know, pretty good averages across all of the mid-latitudes. There were a few outlier cities. For example, Sydney, Australia is experiencing twice the growth of summer length as, say, Vancouver, you know, or 1.5 times as fast as Toronto. So there are places that are kind of outliers. But what we need to know is, we'd like to say, are these trends going to continue? You know, and we could say that we could extrapolate these trends, but that's not necessarily reliable. We know that it's risky to say, well, it's been doing this, so it's going to keep on doing that. That's not necessarily safe. And so we have tools for understanding how the climate may change in the future, and those are called climate models. And so my hope is to use climate model data, climate models we can actually look at how they run backwards. So in other words, do they predict over the same kind of 1990 to 2023 period the same changes? Mm-hmm. And if they do, then I can use and look at that forward. And so I can use climate model output to say, well, are these trends going to continue? Are they going to change? What do we expect based on the level of emissions? That's the other nice thing about climate change or climate models, is that we can say, well, if humans do this, then what is likely to happen? And so that's kind of the next piece of my research, is to try and understand what's going to happen in the future.
Great. So what inspired, just sort of finishing up here, what inspired you to sort of focus your academic studies on climate change?
Yeah, right.
Studies.
I was, before I started at UBC, I was a high school teacher down in the Seattle area, and I was teaching science and math classes, and I taught an earth science class. But in general, it was really palpable how concerned adolescents are about climate change. You know, they're like, they want to know, like, are we in trouble? Am I doomed? What's the point? You know, especially in adolescence, there's a certain level of cynicism, a certain level of distrust that, like, the grownups are actually going to fix the problem. Do they have to fix the problem? And what a burden that places on them. And it really kind of impressed upon me that I had a kind of a desire to get back into university level education, but in terms of like what was the problem that really attracted me to dive into more, their level of concern and my own concern. I have a daughter who attends the University of Victoria, and you know, I want her to have a world to grow up into, and you know, to not be as burdened by what's happening with the climate. So if I can do research that helps, you know, raise the issue, raise the priority, get politicians to start making decisions that help moving us in the right direction, then that's where I want to be.
Great. Well, thank you for doing this research and talking to me today. It's very interesting. And like I say, it's sort of a, it sort of puts a number on something almost all of us have experienced or felt, you know, looking backwards to our own younger days. And it feels quite meaningful to have an actual number on that you know, puts into context what we've experienced.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, Magnus. Yeah. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks so much, Ted Scott, PhD student in the UBC Department of Geography. And you're coming up on a big milestone in your current studies, yeah?
That's true. I've got my PhD qualifying exams starting tomorrow.
Great. And then how much longer before you would complete your program?
I'm hoping to be done within the next 2 years.
Excellent. Well, good luck with all that.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll be talking to you again soon on some more research you're doing. That'd be great.
That'd be great. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Ted Scott from UBC Department of Geography. Thanks for speaking to us today.
Of course.
That was Ted Scott, as we just said, from UBC, PhD student in the Department of Geography. And that's, you know, 4 to 7 days per decade. Summer is getting longer. Is a crazy number when you think about it. So since, you know, we're here in 2026, since 2016, which is when Donald Trump became president for the first time, summers in our region, particularly on the coastal areas, have gotten longer by a whole week, which is kind of scary. Anyway, thanks, Ted Scott, for that conversation. Very interesting. Peter R.H. is here. What are you going to be talking about in your segment at the end of the show?
Well, I'm going to finish up on the abstract expressionism and the CIA involvement, which actually is the Rockefeller involvement. And I'm going to, next week, I'm going to talk more about this book. We're going to touch upon it. It's a 1995 book called Thy Will Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. And Billy Graham had involvement with the Rockefellers. I guess he's in a hot place right now as far as I'm concerned. But that's we'll get even more controversial for next week about all that.
All right, that's coming up at around 10:50, give or take a bit. This is Bird Note, and then we'll be back with a report from Danny Nesvadarani about the disability community upset about cuts to housing supports.
This is Bird Note. Ornithologist and poet J. Drew Lanham often writes about his experience as a black man in the outdoors, both the joy of being in nature and the racism he faces in the field. Sometimes that's led him to bird in places that others might overlook. And one time, looking for sparrows inspired a poem celebrating these little brown birds.
Sparrow envy. Were I the sparrow, brown-backed, skittish, and small, I would find haven in thorniest thickets, search far and wide for fields lain fallow, treasure the unkempt, worship the unmown, covet the weed-strewn row. I would slink between sedges, chip unseen from brambles, skulk deep within hedges, and desire the ditches grown wild. I would find great joy in the mist-sodden morning, sing humble pleas from the highest weeds, and plead for the gray days to stay.
Want to hear more poetry about birds? Check out our new hour-long special, Words in Flight. You can find it on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
We want an answer.
We want an answer. We want an answer. We want an answer.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On April 22nd, Disability Alliance BC and the Individualized Funding Resource Center, or IFRC, spearheaded a rally outside of Gregor Robertson's office in Vancouver. Both organizations work to provide supports and services to adults living with disability. Previously the mayor of Vancouver from 2008 to 2018, Robertson is now the MP for the Vancouver-Fraserview South Burnaby riding, as well as the current federal minister of housing and infrastructure. The reason for the rally was to get a response from Robertson and his staff about the loss of funding for the Right Fit program, which is Canada's only program matching wheelchair users with accessible housing. The program was operated by Disability Alliance BC in partnership with the IFRC and lost its federal funding on April 1st of this year, putting it at risk of permanently shutting down. CJSF attended the rally and found that many of those in attendance were those that have directly benefited from the Right Fit program. At the end of the rally, over 40 people gathered together in a narrow hallway and went up to Gregor Robertson's office and knocked on the door.
Hear us. You have closed your door to our program and to hear wheelchair users that need accessible housing. Please respond. Please respond now. We are here in front of your office with closed doors. Thank you.
Right Fit. 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 Right Fit.
No response was provided. After the rally was over, we spoke with some of the organizers in attendance. Here is what they had to say.
Sure, my name is Paul Gauche. I'm the executive director at the Individualized Funding Resource Center Society, and I'm here with Helene and all these amazing people. Also, Helene is with the Disability Alliance BC, and we're in partnership around a program called the Right Fit program, and this program has been around for the last 9 years supporting wheelchair users to find accessible, affordable housing so that individuals with disabilities aren't ended up being homeless on the street. That funding had been cut as of the end of March, shockingly, frankly. We've had federal funding for the last 6 years, and we had a press conference, and we asked the Minister of Housing, Minister Gregor Robertson, to look at reinstating those dollars, because we're talking about $500,000, but that program has housed over 371 people that really needed housing, wheelchair accessible housing.
No response in person, but how do you feel about just the turnout today and the all the people here that are in support, I guess?
You know, I'm excited about the people that came today. It's not easy, first of all, for wheelchair users to come here. This isn't the most accessible place to get to. But as you could see, that there was a lot of people here. There was about 40 people here altogether. And, you know, and these were people that have either been helped with the Right Fit program and has found their new home. And there's also people here that are desperately looking. We have over 230